Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 98, recorded January 30th, 2012.
Greetings all!
Hello! Welcome to another wonderful week with fish.
Russ and Kelly and Fish.
Okay, we have several contributors today. We have Tony in New York, Joel in Bristol, in England, and Mick in Carnforth, and Charlie. Where's Charlie from?
His current location.
Is, really?
Undisclosed.
Oh, okay. So it's not Charlie from his past location, it's Charlie from his current location.
Yes, from wherever he is.
Okay. It's Quantum Charlie.
Yeah.
And Andreka in Oregon. Okay. So, shall we kick off with Tony?
Yes.
Okay. Tony from New York has written an email, and he says, first, thank you both for taking the time to discuss my previous questions on your show. You're very welcome. Thanks to your advice, I am developing an interest in ram's horn snails and Java moss for my upcoming perfect triops tank, 20 gallons. Both of these seem like great fun, and I expect they'd work well with triops. I wanted to ask, will ram's horn snails crawl out of the tank?
Well, they might sometimes. This is usually something that happens when the water quality is not ideal, but some snails seem to be taken by an inexplicable wanderlust. Who knows why?
They're hobbit snails.
Yeah, there you go. It's not as common in my experience as it is with some other species crawling out, like olive nerites will do it more regularly than ram's horn snails will. But consider it a distinct possibility, but, you know, it's not going to be too much of a problem in general.
Just keep your lid on, right?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay. His next question is, he says, I'm thinking that triops will keep the ram's horn population in check, and I'm thinking that ram's horns may well consume dead triops. What do you think?
Well, when I've kept ram's horns with triops before, I think what you predict tends to be true. Triops would certainly eat newly hatched ram's horn snails if they found them. After the snails have a little growth, though, they're probably safe with their shell in general. I would expect ram's horns to go after dead triops if they're hungry. They're pretty opportunistic. Of course, you wouldn't want to leave the body in there for any length of time anyway, but they probably would go for it. And I can't be sure, but I expect that a 20-gallon tank would end up stabilizing at a fairly high population of snails, especially since the temperature for triops is generally quite warm. So you might end up with an army of ram's horns in this 20-gallon tank to keep the few triops you have in their company. But really high numbers of triops usually aren't stable anyway. You know, they don't last a really long time in general. So, yeah, I think that could work. You just might end up with a lot more snails than triops, but that's not necessarily a problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and he says, finally, I like the idea of Java moss since it promotes infusoria growth in the tank in case of a surprise baby triops hatching.
And that is a good idea. That's a good way to try to promote food for the little triops. Java moss is a great plant. It will probably survive in a triops tank in general. I've kept it with triops on occasion. It is a tough plant, of course. One thing to bear in mind, though, is that the tank is a little warmer than the ideal growth range for Java moss. It tends to slow down substantially with its growth rate as you pass the mid-70s in temperature and go beyond that. Now, this isn't necessarily true of all mosses in the hobby that are called Java moss, though. There are so many species of moss out there masquerading as Java moss, for lack of a better word. People aren't sure, you know, what species they are, understandably, because we're not all bryologists. But if you
darn it, why not?
I don't know. We'd flood the market with bryologists so fast.
Nobody could get a job in bryology anymore.
Right. But if you can get a start of Java moss from someone who keeps it in an aquarium at high 70s to low 80s, and they have good growth, it's probably not true Java moss, but it doesn't matter.
If it works, it works.
So you can try to get some. And I would recommend anchoring the moss to something. Maybe some mature driftwood, because you wouldn't want, really new, fresh driftwood leaching a lot of tannic acids into the tank or anything like that. But some mature driftwood or some sort of rock or something like that, so that the triops don't drag it around the moss. I mean, because if you just put a clump of moss in there,
I think it'd be funny if they were dragging the driftwood around.
Well, they wouldn't be able to do that.
Little triops to it, big driftwood chariot. You just hook up like 20 of them and they can drag it across the sand and have driftwood races.
Oh, thank you for that bizarre image. That was...
Oh, sorry.
No, I kind of enjoy that. That's kind of fun. So, if you don't basically attach the moss to something, the triops will drag it around and reduce it to a massive detached fronds, and they'll end up floating all over and clogging the filter intake or your sponge or whatever you have. And they will probably nibble on it a bit anyway, but if it's attached to something firmly, they won't make such a mess of it. And like I said, the moss is really a good idea to encourage the infusorial growth. And I may have said this before, but I've had fry show up in tanks that are full of java moss and not even notice until a few days later, and they're doing fine when I find them, full little bellies. So
they hid in the java moss.
Yeah.
They good were stuff to eat.
Exactly. So good idea there. All right. Well, so thanks, Tony. And hopefully that helps as you plan your perfect triops tank.
And now we're going to Joel in Bristol, in England.
Yeah. And this is a new contributor, Joel is. So welcome aboard,
welcome,
Joel.
In fact, he says, "Hey guys, just found out about your podcast a few weeks ago, and I've been working my way through them. There's so much fascinating info to absorb, and all the chit-chat and banter makes it very rich and entertaining as well." See, so me talking about triops chariots, they like it.
I know, it's good stuff.
It's good stuff. He says, "I've been having some major problems in my 15-liter planted nano over the last few weeks, and I thought I would relay my observations and see if you had any thoughts." Now, Joel says, 14th of January, he moved his tank back from his dad's house. His dad had been fish-sitting for him for a few months. During the run, his heater was broken. That's so sad. But the rest of the move went fine, and he replaced the heater with a ReSun 25-watt. The next morning, he found his gold spot shrimp had died, so he tested the water parameters, and they came back normal, and there was no ammonia. So he thought, well, maybe it was just stress from moving. But the next day, his two rocket panchex killifish became timid and lethargic, and on the Tuesday evening, he found them floating upside down on the surface of the tank. They were still breathing and trying to swim, but obviously not well at all. So he did about a 45% water change and moved one of the fish to a backup tank, but he lost them both shortly thereafter. So the next weekend, he started losing his cherry shrimp, and he again tried moving the survivors to the backup tank, but it didn't help. He says, by this point, a few plants were looking off color and starting to lose leaves. He kept doing frequent small water changes every few days, but all he's got left is the two assassin snails in the tank. That's all. And he says the water has developed a grayish tinge. He cleaned the tank and found a big clump of whitish goop from the sucker holding the new heater in place. So he took it and he looked under a microscope and found that it had a huge quantity of amoebas feeding on smaller, fast-moving protists, which were there a lot of those too, but there were also lots of paramecium, another large protozoa in the material, and the amoeba, he said the amoeba were probably the most. So he took both of the suction cups from the heater out of the tank, but he's wondering, could this little colony of microorganisms be what's killing his fish, or is that a symptom of a larger problem? He says, I tested the water parameters yesterday and they remain the same. I keep my tank at about 75 degrees and have an EFIM pickup 45 internal filter, and the tank has been set up about 4 months. That's not, of course, I mean, not set up since the move.
Right.
4 months, just
that's previous
general,
to the move, yeah. Okay. Well, this is a really interesting situation. Joel also sent...
Are you into Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, this is a very interesting situation.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
There were some initial pictures of the tank that Joel had sent previous to the move, and the tank looked really nice. It was a very nicely set up tank, so I don't think it was anything in terms of long-term husbandry that was causing the problem, based on the fact that your parameters are stable in general, and that your tank looks great. Your shrimp were healthy and they're very intolerant of water conditions, so I do think it was something that was relating to the move, of course. Now, I do wonder, with your father taking care of the tank, whether or not he is well-versed in
the ancient important art
of aquarium care. Yeah. If he had been overfeeding, because some of the things that you mentioned lead me to believe he may have been, but I'm not certain of that, of course. Maybe he's an expert aquarist, so I can't really say, but that's something to think about. This goo, this goop, whatever it is, full of protists of various sorts, was it inside the sucker, the part that's up against the glass, or was it more on
the part
outside?
That's in the water?
Part more exposed to the water? That's something to consider, too. I noticed that with the fairly fine-grade substrate that you had in the aquarium, now that's not a bad thing in and of itself, but I'm imagining that with the sort of substrate and the grain that you had in there, you could have some anaerobic pockets, some anoxia going on, you know, various degrees of both of those. So moving the tank, if things were to shift, it would be possible to
stir those up.
Stir some things up from the bottom that could be dangerous. That's one possibility. So hydrogen sulfide, you know, into the water column, that could cause some problems.
Would that just dissipate eventually, or what does he do about that, if that is the case?
Well, the water changes would be important. And
is that mainly the thing that you would try to do?
Yeah, yeah. But it's very toxic even in small quantities, but that's what I would do, and he's doing the right thing, as far as I'm concerned with that. Did the substrate shift significantly when you were moving? I mean, if it did shift a lot and you noticed it, that might help. Of course, it wouldn't rule out a problem with the substrate even if it didn't shift a lot. But anyway, that's one thing that comes to mind.
If it shifted a lot, it could have released these.
Yeah, yeah, it may have. But, like I said, the water changes, great idea, the way you did it. The large water change when you noticed, you know, something was obviously wrong. And I'm sure that you used, you know, properly conditioned water and didn't have to worry about gas bubble disease. It's a fairly small tank, so that's not too hard to do. But I would keep doing that and then do the small ones like you did after. The grayish tinge to the water, that sounds like it could be a bacterial bloom. And one thing that, this may or may not be the case, but I'm kind of thinking that this grayish goop, or this whitish goop that you found, had been there for a while. And that for all these protists to be there, they were eating something. And so, whether that's just food particles in the water, or if it happens to be bacteria, there's a large food source, and that all of these little protists in the water column and in these agglomerations, whatever they were, may have lost oxygen, and a large number of them may have died off, maybe in the substrate. I might check and see in the substrate if you have parts of substrate that have this goop growing. You know, if you have a layer of this caked goop in the substrate, that could be possible. And then when you have the filter running in there, you've got a fair amount of oxygen in the very top layer of the substrate. But if, you know, it doesn't take very long for that stuff like that, organisms down there, to run out of oxygen very quickly once the filter's turned off. And during the move, you could have had a die-off, and then that could have resulted in some of the problems, maybe using up a lot of oxygen quickly with the decomposition. Mm-hmm. And that could have done, although I'm puzzled by that too, because then it seems like you would have an ammonia reading. But maybe the test kit's so old or something, you know. There's a lot of possibilities, too many really possibilities, but these are just some things to think about. Especially though, since you keep testing and everything seems fine, then that's what's really throwing me off, because usually you'd see something from the tests. But I would say just keep doing what you're doing. Think about those few things that I just mentioned, and hopefully one of them will lead to something. And just keep us updated if you discover anything. And
good luck.
Yeah, hopefully those two assassin snails will pull out. Once in a while things happen and a whole tank crashes, and it's not always apparent what causes it. So, yeah, let us know how that goes, and keep up what you have been doing with the partial water changes.
Okay, next we have email from Charlie. He says, I started listening to the show back in 2008 or 2009, took a break from the hobby, and now I am getting back into the addiction again.
Well, Charlie, this is what I gotta say to you. Once you start down the path to the fishy side, forever will it dominate your destiny.
Okay. So basically, he's glad we're still here, but he's wondering how to get the older shows from iTunes, which is a pretty common question.
It is, you know, and it's a good question because it makes
me happy
to,
tell you
that everybody wants to know that. So right after the break, we'll come back and tell you how to do that, sort of.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay, so you want to get the older episodes of Aquarimax into iTunes. I'm not sure.
Well, you can't
that
get them
possible.
Off of iTunes anymore.
As far as I can tell. I've looked into that. And apparently they won't show up on iTunes. But you can get them by
going...
And you
can still download them.
Still
download
them.
Put
them
on whatever device you're listening to.
You just have to do it manually, which I know is kind of a pain.
It's not any...
But it's not too bad. And it's... You just go to...
Our website
and go to the podcast page.
Again, our website is
aquarimax.com. Mm-hmm. And you scroll down the podcast page until it says previous. And you can go all the way back to episode one if you like.
Yes.
And maybe you don't want to go that far, but you can go as far as you want to go and
find
just download them manually.
Missed.
Yep. So that's the best we can do for now because I think the way that iTunes now does things, they just don't allow us to keep them all on the website as they used to. Maybe it's because we have too many podcasts. Maybe it's they've just changed, but whatever it is, fairly recently they changed that so you couldn't get them all.
So, but we're glad you're back.
We are. And keep us updated on your RAM tank.
Okay. Now we've heard from Andreka again. And she says, I am researching fish to add to our heavily planted 29-gallon tank with one betta, about 6 corys, maybe 7 danios, 3 loaches, 2 gouramis, and 3 Congo tetras. Seriously Fish says that fork-tailed rainbow fish are not suitable for the general community tank due to their small adult size, but can be kept with other small, peaceful species such as danios, small tetras, rasbores, etc. Everybody in our tank seems to get along. Am I deluding myself?
Well... One question I would ask is, what types of loaches, gouramis, and danios do you have? Because the answers to those questions could help us discover that. Based on the adult size of the fish and the aggressiveness of the fish, which, of course, vary widely among gouramis and loaches. And so that would be important. Like coolie loaches, you know, not aggressive fish. But some of the other loaches can be kind of mean. Sometimes, and the same goes for gouramis. There are gouramis that are pretty nice and some that are not so nice. So,
give us some examples of the gouramis on either side.
Well, let's see. A dwarf gourami is usually pretty nice, but they're somewhat territorial, but mostly to their own kind, but not near as much as, you know, maybe a paradise gourami. You wouldn't want two males in a tank unless we're very, very large. So things like that. Loaches, a skunk, Boutier loach would be not nearly as nice as a coolie loach in general, things like that. So, and then giant danios get a lot bigger than zebra danios, for example.
How big do giant danios get?
Giant danios, maybe 3 or 4 inches.
Like
they're pretty
goldfish.
Big.
Goldfish.
They're not as massive as a fully mature goldfish by any means, but they get pretty big.
Well.
They're a thin, streamlined fish.
So how big do these...
Fork-tail rainbow fish?
Fork-tail rainbow fish,
They're quite small.
Like, define quite small.
Males, probably less than 2 inches long.
Isn't that about how big our rainbow fish are?
Oh, no, ours get a bit bigger than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they don't get huge, is the idea.
No, fork-tail rainbow fish are pretty small.
Okay.
They're striking fish.
Because when I think really small, I think like a guppy.
Or a celestial pearl danio or something.
Yeah.
Fork-tail rainbows are bigger than celestial pearl danios. But they're not very big. And they have very interesting finnage and coloration. They interesting displaying habits the males display for the females. I can't blame you for wanting some, Andreka. I've looked at those and thought, oh, wow, that would be cool. But I have never kept them, so anyone who has kept them, please feel free to comment on that. But my understanding from what I have learned is that you'll get more out of forktail rainbows in terms of behavior, displays, coloration, and so on, when they are in a species tank. So maybe you should just get another tank. Well, I know I can't say that.
Who suggested that? That was the little shoulder devil.
Yeah. So maybe you can't do that right now, but I would just say, if you can't, you might want to hold off, unless someone comes in and says, no, I keep them with everything, and they're fine, but... my understanding is that it really will be a better experience for you if you put them in their own tank. So basically, maybe just let us know what those fish in the tank are species-wise. That might help, and maybe we can give you some suggestions. And maybe not, depending on what you've got and what might work out for you. Okay. Andreka did have a couple other comments and questions, did she not?
Yeah, she had a couple other questions. A few episodes ago... I think it was episode 93, we mentioned the ocean-free conch line, which is funny.
Kind of a tongue-in-cheek, silly, pseudo-informative phone line you can call.
Jokes for fish people.
Yeah, jokes for fish people. Like you can hear the sea lion talking. You get to hear the sea lion, an Australian sea lion, and you push the button, and it says something like, "G'day, I'm an Australian sea lion." Things like that. So
I think they have a mermaid, too.
They have a mermaid. They've got various things. So,
you know, if you wasted a bunch of time on Facebook and you still have a bunch more time to waste, go call this number.
But the number is 1-800-286-2326.
And if you have that much time to waste both on Facebook and those, then you have more time than I do. And I'm jealous.
But anyway.
But it is funny, so... It's good.
No, I think it's worth it for, you know, once in a while visit. I don't think it's, a problem to go there once in a while. You're fine.
Are you justifying?
Yeah. I am. It's okay. All right, next thing.
She had asked us about primary and secondary foods.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure exactly what she was referring to with that. And so I talked about some ideas that I had about what it might be referring to, but then I asked her which brand of display that she had seen in the store referred to this, and she said it was something like, she said it was Hikari, so...
So what does that mean, then?
So that means I'll have to look up Hikari and see what they're talking about.
Okay.
Because I gave my ideas already in that episode, but I'm just not sure what they meant exactly. So
you could look up their lingo.
Be interested in finding that out.
The Hikari lingo.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There's something else I want to say.
What do you want to say?
Mick, who did our fish room considerations
last week,
he sent those to us. He has also sent us all his pictures.
From the fish room?
From the fish room.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's kind of a virtual tour, which you can see on this episode's page, or you can see on the previous episode, episode 97's page.
Cool.
So either way, you can go there and check it out. It's pretty cool. He's got some things in there that he discussed in the fish room episode, but he's also got some extra bonus features that you should check out, too. So it's fun and informative, and I enjoyed it. So thanks again, Mick, for doing that for us.
Indeed.
And sending those in. And he's going to be doing an interview for us pretty soon. So
we're excited about that.
Yeah, keep your ears skinned for that. That'll be fun.
Skinned ears sound painful.
Well, don't keep them literally skinned. Well, keep the skin on them. Okay, now I'm digging myself a hole. But I'm just going to say, he's got some inverts that you might not expect to see.
In the pictures?
In the pictures. They're pretty cool. So check those out. And I think that is about it for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay, so...
Watch out for Triops chariots.
May the fish be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.